Where's the beer, Tom?
What?
The beer. Where's the beer?
I thought you were getting the beer.
You what? No beer? You idiot, Tom. You total idiot. That was your job, you complete moron. You cretin. That's what you are. A total and utter cretin.
It was a joke, Rob. I was joking. It was a Christmas joke.
Oh. I see.
Of course I got the beer. It's from Beer 52. I got 8 specially themed beers, and there are snacks and even an award-winning magazine for just £5.95 postage. I researched it all online. All I had to do was go to beer52.com/peep.
That sounds like a lovely case of beers. I'm sorry I flew off the handle a bit.
That wasn't very Christmassy.
No, it wasn't. I apologise. So if I wanted to get my own free case of beer, how would I go about doing that?
Well, to get your first free case of beers, simply head to beer52.com/peep. You'll get 8 specially themed beers, a couple of snacks, and that award-winning magazine. All you need to do is pay the £5.95 for postage.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, a podcast all about discussing and reviewing the British sitcom Peep Show. My name's Tom Harrison and I'm joined, as always, by Rob Graham.
Hello!
And it wasn't the end. We are back. We've got a few more left in the tank. And while we may have finished Peep Show Series 1 to 9, we're going to be discussing something a little bit different this week. I don't know whether you wanted to kind of introduce this special episode, Rob?
Yeah, so we've had this one in the pipeline for a fair while, and Tom and I sort of weighed up whether we wanted to cover it, but I feel like we need to do it a disservice, because I hope that's not what we do it, but we needed to give it a go. So what we're going to do this week is we're going to discuss, I wouldn't say review, because we're not going to do it in quite the same way that we do it with our normal Peep Show episodes. We're going to discuss the US pilot that was made in 2005 the US pilot of Peep Show that starred Johnny Galecki, who played Leonard in The Big Bang Theory, and Josh Mayer, and sort of have a look. There's a full episode of this that you can find on YouTube, so if you haven't watched it before you're listening to this, I suggest you sort of go and check it out before you listen to us talk about it, or watch it immediately after we've talked about it so you can understand what we're talking about. And then we're also going to have a bit of a chat about some of the other US pilots, or one other US pilot in particular that wasn't released, but that was made slightly after that. And just maybe have a bit of a discussion about why these pilots sort of never made it to air, why they had, not to spoil what we're going to say, but why they didn't really work.
Yeah, you're right. So before we get to, you know, into the US pilot, though, let's shout out our lovely patrons who have been supporting us, even though we've kind of come to the end of Peep Show proper. So, yeah, let's shout them out.
Yeah, and we've actually managed to, since we finished, I think we recorded our last episode sort of mid-October, and I think we've gained about 5 new patrons since we did that. So massive shout out to these guys. So Andrew Kennedy, Ian Webb, Steve Maunder, Stuart Hancox, and Edgardo Martinez. Big welcome to you guys. I think you're the guys who've joined since we last recorded. We then have Hannah Ostrov, Bence Bartow, Rakeem Patel, Brandon Jackson, Drew Allen, Gareth Stevens, Jamie from Up and Running, Joe Sims, Sean Ronan-Smith, Caroline Murray, Rory Robinson, Rob Craik, Adam Dawn, Eric Lenz, David Butler, Vijay Bao, Katka Skokowska, Stephen Darrenset, Justin Dunleavy, Jason Martin, Nick Howard, Simon Darlington, Eleanor Wall, Benjamin Price, Olivia Kelmes-Hoy, Steve Morano, Sarah McDaniel, Dee Bizzle, John Barker, Isaac Molly Morgan, Ash Krishna, Stuart Hill, John C. Ralston, Jonathan Gardner, Tim Chamberlain, Jessica Isler, Michael Collins, John Fraser, George Johansson Byberg, Alex Watson, Doug Simpson, Andrew Mason, Daniel Thompson, Laurie Johnson, Tricia Atenzia, Robert Horvath, and Darren Friedrichs, Dave Pink, and Mike Kavanagh. I'm out of breath considerably.
Breathe.
What do you do? Cool. What do you do whilst I'm reading those out? I always imagine you like nip off for a wee or something when I'm doing those.
I was just looking over my notes.
You got plenty of time.
I could probably read an entire novel, yeah. But no, shout out to all of the patrons. Yeah, but especially as Rob said, you know, we've kind of finished, you know, the series 1 to 9, and for people to continue giving their support, and you know, new people joining as well, is even kind of more heartwarming. So yes, shout out to all of you. But yeah, so we're going to get into the US pilot, talk a little bit about it, and then kind of actually do a sort of brief kind of very like overview type review. We're going to run through sort of how this pilot is similar to the original, how it makes some different choices in other areas where it kind of diverges from the original sort of source material. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this. We knew that we would do this at some point, and we ended up just kind of putting it off until we'd done all of the original. So yeah, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's dive into the 2005 US pilot of Peep Show.
Okay, right. So, as Rob said, if you haven't watched it yet, probably recommend that you go ahead and watch it. We'll share the link on YouTube, on our Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. Quick word of warning, the audio quality is very, very rough, so keep the volume turned down. There's some sort of like horrible kind of screeching or scratching kind of going on. It's really pretty rough going, which doesn't really help when the episode itself is also very, very rough. But I kind of came into this, I don't know about you, Rob, but I'd seen a little bit of this before, and I hadn't got to the end for several reasons. But, you know, knowing that I had to do it for this, we were going to do sort of like a semi-proper review of it. I decided, you know, I don't want to just dunk on it for like half an hour and just, you know, say that it's terrible. I wanted to keep an open mind about it, actually, you know, have a little bit of analysis and like what they did, why they may have done it, and you know, the things that they kept, the things that they decided to change, because I think those are quite interesting choices when you're trying to remake someone else's work. And as someone who's quite a big fan of both the UK and US Office, in fact I'd say massive fan of both, I think it's really interesting when you have like an adaptation of something that you already kind of know and love.
Yeah, and you touching on The Office is actually quite important, because I've watched both the UK and US Office, but what was the gap between the US Office starting after the UK Office had finished? So the UK Office was done in, what, 2001, 2002?
Yeah.
And when did the US Office start? What was the gap? Because one of the things I was going to touch on was how interesting, like, this pilot was made in 2005. Obviously, it wasn't released, but it was made in 2005. So it was only really after you'd had one, maybe two series of the UK version of Peep Show. And so they've made a pilot of a show that presumably hadn't really hit the heights at that point.
I think the US Office started in 2005. So quite an interesting, yeah, that these two kind of went side by side almost. But yeah, The Office had kind of finished by that point, whereas Peep Show was very much, you know, alive and well, and if anything, kind of hadn't reached the heights that it was going to go on to. So yeah, I do think that's an interesting point, that they're already kind of recreating something that hasn't, you know, even kind of... I think that would put it at sort of series 2 or 3, wouldn't it, when Peep Show was actually, you know, starting to properly find its feet. And they're already remaking it.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting... It's interesting. Like, I think the actual episode and the way they've gone about it is quite interesting. They've picked two actors who, at that point, presumably, like, both of them are relatively well-known actors now. Like, Johnny Galecki and Josh Mayers have both gone on, like, Josh Mayers is in That 70s Show, And Johnny Galecki obviously has gone on to like be one of the most well-paid actors in TV. Like, he's gone on to huge, huge success. But they've tried to emulate, they've clearly tried to emulate the Mark, not emulate, imitate, the Mark and Jeremy characters played by Mitchell and Webb. Now, the first thing I'd say is that's really hard to do because those characters were literally written for David and Robert. So as soon as you're trying to play those characters with two different people, it's never going to work quite as well.
No, yeah, hit the nail on the head there. I think, yeah, that's a kind of perfect summary. You can't, like you say, these characters were created and even, you know, partially based on some of the stories that Rob and David would share with Sam and Jesse. If you haven't listened to our chat with Sam Bain, sort of co-creator and writer of Peep Show, then recommend you listening to that. But I think, yeah, like you say, very hard when Mark and Jez are literally kind of moulded, created specifically for these two people to kind of try and do it justice with someone else is never going to, it's just not going to be the same, is it? It's always going to be kind of like a shadow of the character.
And I have to say, like, I don't think that Johnny Galecki does necessarily a bad job of playing Mark, playing that sort of like nervous, sort of nerdy, awkward around women, double guessing everything that he's doing, sort of side that we see to Mark and like that is pivotal to Mark's character. I think it's really hard to say any more than that about Johnny Galecki's portrayal, really, because we've only got a 23 and a half minute video of it. Like, we haven't got him doing it for episode upon episode upon episode. I think he's one of those people that I can't disassociate from the main role he's played. And to me, him playing this is him playing Leonard Hofstadter.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
the characters are so similar.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a key thing that works against Johnny Galecki. I quite like The Big Bang Theory. I know it kind of gets a bit of stick, and I think it's a little bit mixed, The Big Bang Theory, but I think on the whole, I quite like it, actually. But what I don't like is the character of Leonard, who I actually kind of despise. So I kind of like The Big Bang Theory in spite of Leonard. And I kind of just, Leonard's just kind of like a big whiner, isn't he? And I think, unfortunately, he kind of brings that to Mark. And, you know, the Mark that we kind of know and love, portrayed by David Mitchell, he's a moaner, but he's not a whiner. And I think, while, you know, those two traits, they might sound similar, but actually I think they create, you know, it's quite a different performance and a take on the character.
But I suppose we're not trying to do a comparison between Leonard and Mark, but I think a similar sort of link between them is the fact that, like, Mark and Leonard both are not comfortable. They are both losers, for want of a better word. They're both like in the lower social strata, but feel like they should be cooler than they are. Like, they're not comfortable being, like, Big Bang Theory, for example, like, Howard, Sheldon, Raj, they're all quite comfortable in that sort of, like, nerdiness. Like Dobby and Gerard are in Peep Show, whereas Leonard always is trying, I suppose Howard does to a certain extent, but Leonard is always trying to aspire to be more, which I think is what Mark isn't comfortable being around the nerds in Peep Show quite a lot of the time. Like, he always sort of tries to behave and even says, like, I'm several social strata above you. So I think there are parallels to be made. I don't want to turn this into a Big Bang versus Peep Show, because Johnny Galecki isn't Leonard Hofstadter.
No.
But I definitely think that skewed my viewing of this, because all I could see was him as Leonard.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't help, though, that when the scenes throughout this pilot where Mark is kind of nagging Jeremy or kind of, you know, pushing him to try and get a job or whatever, it comes across as really whiny. And Mark never really did that in kind of, you know, the original. He would get angry, he would get sarcastic, he would do all these other things. And to me, the reason I associate so much with this portrayal of Mark and Leonard, and ultimately, you know, same guy, he's going to kind of do similar things with it. It just doesn't click with me, and I think I'd be interested if I hadn't seen The Big Bang Theory before this. Maybe it would be different, but I'm just, yeah, I have this kind of thing in my brain that kind of doesn't let me, you know, kind of disassociate, and I really do dislike Leonard in The Big Bang Theory. And I think a lot of the reasons I dislike Leonard are also kind of on display here with Mark, and it's only kind of made worse is because Mark is a character I love, and he's kind of being done, not even like he's being done wrong, but I also think like it's important to, if you're gonna do a remake, it's like, are you gonna do a one for one, you know, likeness, which is what the US remake of The Office did for its pilot, essentially. And that was awful. Really awful. Unwatchable. If I start watching The US Office now, I start at episode 2, because I just pretend that episode, you know, the pilot doesn't exist. It's so bad. But when you start, you know, you handed it over to, you know, the writers that, you know, went on to handle The American Office, it's suddenly, it's a breath of fresh air. And there are some choices in this pilot where I kind of think, oh, I see what you were trying to do there. Not always for, you know, for the good, the better, sometimes for the worse as well. It's an interesting one. And I think even the fact that they called them Mark and Jeremy, I kind of wanted to put to you, like, that's a big question mark there, because is it better to do that? Because in my opinion, it just kind of makes the comparisons between the two, like, really, you know, more stark. And I noticed that only Mark, Jeremy and Sophie are kept the same. All the other names, as far as I recall, are all different.
Yeah, just to go back to your earlier point, I think with The Office, that's the big fundamental difference, is that you can go beyond the pilot episode. Like, this was so bad from the pilot that it never made it past that stage, and neither did the 2008 pilot that they made of Peep Show as well, which Sam and Jesse were involved in. With this, whether it was that bad, whether it just didn't have the backing, although this was made by Fox, it's not like it was made by like a small minor company, like it was developed by Fox. I wonder whether the difference is that The Office had the backing of major people, like Ricky Gervais was involved with it, whereas this wasn't backed by the original people who'd made Peep Show. I don't know whether that's a difference. But yeah, I think what you touched on about saying that you either need to sort of rebrand it entirely, have completely different characters and then go with it, they've sort of got stuck in the middle. They have gone with Mark, Jeremy and Sophie, but then like Tony has changed to, is it Marsha?
Yeah.
And then the Jeff character has a ridiculous
Jonesy
name. What's his name?
I wanted to talk about that. Like, while we're talking about the Jeff Jonesy thing, I didn't even realise that Jonesy was supposed to be Jeff until the scene where Mark hides in the cupboard, which we all know from the original. And he goes in that cupboard, doesn't he, hiding, just like the original. And I thought, oh, he was in there, the camera, it all goes dark. And I was like, oh, I wonder who's going to open the door. Like, it was going to be the Jeff character. I wonder who, you know, what that person will be like. And then it dawned on me, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, is it going to be Jonesy? And sure enough, the door opens, and Jonesy stood there. And they have just totally fumbled Jeff / Jonesy. It's unbelievable.
I think what they've done is, and they've done it the same in the 2008 pilot, they have turned him into a jock. That's what they've done. They've turned the Jeff character away from being just like a, like in the UK Peep Show, I hate calling it the UK Peep Show. Peep Show, the only one that's ever probably been made, has got Jeff, who's that sort of like, yes, he's a wind-up merchant, he's a pain in the ass, but he's not horrible. He's not he's not really a bully to Mark in the same way that I imagine this Jonesy character would become.
Oh, I...
if he would been developed further.
I took it completely the other way. I thought Jonesy seemed like a relatively nice guy. Like I say, I didn't know he was going to be Jeff until Mark was in that cupboard. And then I thought, oh, hang on a minute, is that what they're going to do? Because if so, that just feels totally wrong to me. Jonesy and Mark in this just have a fairly normal conversation. I think the only reason that Jonesy kind of is freaked out, and when he is freaked out, he kind of has every reason to be, because Mark is saying all of these weird and horrific things. And with Jeff in this episode, in the original, he kind of lays into Mark, he kind of pulls no punches, whereas in this, Jonesy just seems like a relatively normal guy. He's not the one at the end that kind of takes the piss by singing the song when they're all in the trapped in the lift together. He doesn't really express any kind of, you know, bullying behaviour. And I think they got that totally wrong. I just think, what's the point in even having him then? If he's not going to really fulfil that Jeff role, to me, I just thought, get rid of him. What's the point?
Yeah, I suppose, again, it comes back to not really knowing enough about where they were taking the rest of the show, because they didn't get the chance to after the pilot.
But don't you think, though, with a pilot, the whole point is to communicate what the show is going to be?
I do, but how different are Mark and Jeremy in episode 1, 2, and 3 of series 1 to how they become in the rest of the show? Like, Mark, especially, I feel, goes a massive character shift. Like, you get some of the fundamentals, but there are some big parts of his personality that change from that first episode onwards. And I think... yeah, I don't know. I might be completely wrong. You and I have obviously got completely different impressions of the Jonesy character, which is good, which is a good, healthy... good. We wouldn't want to agree on everything on the podcast all the time. It'd be boring. I just feel like in America, you have that sort of, like, bullying character, which, again, I might have just really picked up the vibe wrong with Jonesy, but I sussed that they would turn him into more of, like, a jock rather than the sort of, like, cheeky, chappy type character that Jeff really is.
Yeah, I don't think you can really... it's not a very American thing, is it, to have someone like Jeff? And for someone, you know, in a lot of American shows and films, you're right, it's kind of like, you know, the captain of the football team who's like the school bully or whatever, even though, like, this is all taking place in, like, the adult world. I don't think you get to... I've never really seen a character like Jeff in any kind of, like, Hollywood film or American TV show. I think Jeff is kind of a very British kind of guy that's kind of quite open. Jeff can be quite openly cruel, can't he? I don't think Americans kind of really have that in them so much.
No, yeah, and US and UK antagonists are very different, like, fundamentally, in basically any type of, whether it's drama, whether it's comedy, whether it's romance, like, the antagonist always is played differently, is represented differently. I think that's societal, that's cultural.
Yeah, I think we have a history, don't we, of film villains being portrayed by British actors. I just think there's something maybe in that where British people perhaps kind of play the arsehole quite well.
Yeah, completely. It might be quite interesting. I've realised we've got 20 minutes into this episode without actually discussing what happens in this episode. So it might be quite interesting, rather than reviewing it minute by minute like we tend to do with our UK Peep Show episodes, sort of give an overview of sort of what happens in the episode. So it's basically a mashup of warring factions and warring factions and the interview, isn't it?
Yeah, episodes 1 and 2.
So the episode sort of basically starts with Mark and Jez sort of in their flat, very similar to how it starts off in the UK Peep Show. They get a knock on the door. It's the Tony character, who's called Marsha in this episode. And she's trying to impress a guy who she's sort of brought back. She needs some wine. Like, it's all fairly sort of similar. I can imagine that plot being in a UK episode, although it's not what happens in the pilot, in the UK one. And it is effectively still the warring factions of Mark and Jez wanting to both pull Marsha, isn't it?
Yeah, essentially they're kind of competing for her kind of from the off, aren't they? And they're both kind of trying to, you know, big themselves up in front of her, but it's quite clear that she's kind of not interested in either of them. There's this other guy that's in her flat, and it all becomes kind of this weird kind of three-way. Not, I think Mark and Jez both think that they're flirting, but for Marsha, it's kind of just like a, she just wants something from them, which is kind of, you know, fitting from the Tony character, who kind of like, yeah, sure, she kind of had a weird kind of relationship with Jez, but I think on the whole, she kind of wasn't really interested in either of them. So in that aspect, that plot point is pretty similar.
And I think what they've done is they've really ramped up the characters of what the fundamentals of the UK guys were. Like, Jeremy does this ridiculous thing where he's like dancing to a boombox thing almost in the background, which is so like, Robert Webb's character wouldn't do that. That is similar to the sort of thing he would do, but it's so like dialed up to 11.
Yeah, I actually couldn't, I know I said at the beginning that I was going to try and avoid like dunking on this like too badly, but this moment where Jeremy kind of just starts playing the boombox and dancing, like, it is just atrocious, like seriously an abomination of the scene. It just, the scene dies from it, honestly. It is so, like, unbearable to watch. And I know, like, the original Peep Show kind of thrives, doesn't it, on that cringe humour? But this version of it is just, oh, man. It's so, it goes beyond anything, I think, that, I think Jeremy has enough self-awareness to kind of know how tragic this is. And it just comes off totally ludicrous to me. And I was just kind of, you see Mark's face as he's watching Jeremy doing all this, and I'm just like, yeah, I feel exactly the same. Like, what is happening right now?
And I think, and I hadn't really thought about this point until I've just said it, but I think that is the fundamental thing. The whole way through, the Jeremy character especially, like, the Mark character is very awkward, and I don't think is that badly played out of the two of them. But I think that the Jeremy character is just so dialed up. Like, even later on, and we're skipping forward about 20 minutes, but, like, when he's in the flat with Marsha and she's just broken up with her boyfriend, and, like, he really sort of, like within five, like, half a second, he, like, jumps on her as soon as she's given half a chance. Like, I know Jeremy kind of does that, but he does it in like a charming way in the UK one. And this way, he just like sort of slides over and put his arms around her. Like, it's just so dialed up.
He's kind of creepier, I think.
Yeah, and I think, I know when I say dialed up, that is literally US TV. Appreciate we've got a lot of American listeners, and I hope that if you're listening to this, you've also watched other UK comedies to understand that what I'm saying is that, like, everything the US does in comparison to what the UK does is, like, bigger, better. Like, it's all about, like, the Americans have got to do things the best and the biggest. Like, there are big parts of this where you go, the awkward, niche, cringe, like, subtle humour that makes Peep Show and a lot of UK comedy so funny doesn't translate to an American audience. So therefore, it has to be made more obvious and more, like, in your face. Like him doing that stupid dance in the background. Like him sliding over on the sofa and put his arm around Marsha. Like, all of those things you have to see. They have to be at the front, because otherwise you're not necessarily going to notice them, because that's just not the way that US comedies are written.
Yeah, I think in fairness, we might be doing them a bit of a disservice there, but I think Americans, I think mainstream audience, I think it tends to be kind of bigger, louder is better. Whereas I think a lot of the kind of classic British comedies are, like you say, subtle. That's the key word there, subtle and a lot of nuance. Whereas I think it comes from the fact that UK comedies don't have a canned laughter. I think that is a massive sort of point of differentiation between UK and US comedy. Canned laughter kind of changes things massively, and it doesn't even, you know, it doesn't change the writing or the acting or anything of the show, but it just changes the dynamic entirely. And I think US comedy, just on that alone, has kind of gone in a different direction. And I think when you're trying to recreate a UK comedy show, and they don't use canned laughter, in fairness, in this remake, but it feels like perhaps they almost should, because it's kind of like a tug of war, where it's like, in some instances, this is really kind of America-fied, and the others, they're trying to like remain truthful to the source material, and I think it just doesn't work.
No, and I think, to be fair, if they'd had canned laughter, I probably literally would have switched it off after 2 minutes. I could not have got through a full episode with canned laughter. I think, and I might be wrong, I'm sure someone has made a, like, has put canned laughter into an episode of Peep Show, and it's on the net somewhere. I'll see if I can find it. I'm sure someone shared it on Reddit. I'll see if I can find it, and I'll share it on our social media channels, because it really changes. Like, I think, if I remember rightly, like, when Jeremy appears around the corner, like, it does that. You know, like, in American comedies, when the big famous actor suddenly appears, and all the, like, the yeah. audience were like, hey!
Yeah.
Like, I think that's literally what happens when Robert Webb comes around the corner. So,
well, have you seen the clip of someone took the canned laughter out of The Big Bang Theory?
And oh my god, it's tragic, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So that's what I mean, is the canned laughter changes a show dramatically, because The Big Bang Theory is, you know, people kind of, it has a bit of a mixed sort of reputation. I think mainstream it did very well, but I think some people kind of love to hate on it. I am somewhere sort of in the middle. I can sit down and enjoy it quite a bit, but I think there are also kind of a lot of issues I have with it, or things that I, you know, that I don't find funny. But when you take that laughter track out, it sucks the life out of it in a really brutal way.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I don't think, I don't, we're not dunking on this Johnny Galecki pilot, but I don't think I could have, I only just got through what was there as it was, let alone if it then had canned laughter in it as well. It was just, yeah, maybe, I think, again, and we're sort of waffling a bit, but like, I think that one of the big things that makes Peep Show funny is the subtlety. And if you've got a laughter track dictating what's funny, then it immediately just takes that out.
Yeah, completely agree.
And that's why British comedy is... I'm going to be really careful what I say here. But like, I find a lot of US comedies that have laughter tracks on, like, I don't... And I'm going to upset probably 95% of the listeners and probably 95% of the people that are on this podcast at the moment, or 50% of the people that are on this podcast at the moment. I don't like Friends for the reason of having a laughter track. Well, it's not a laughter track, okay. Or having an audience, like having laughter. I just don't like listening to a show where it feels like you're being told when to laugh. I prefer like UK comedies where the subtlety is everything, like Peep Show, The Office, like Blackadder. Like, actually, to be fair, Blackadder does have laughter in it, but for some reason that doesn't annoy me quite as much. I'm not really sure why.
I think, yeah, the point that you made about being almost told when to laugh, I think is, it can become a crutch, can't it? And I think, like that instance of where the person edited out the canned laughter in The Big Bang Theory and it kind of just sucked the life out of it, it becomes a crutch where, like, if you can tell people when they should laugh, they'll almost kind of laugh on command, and they probably won't even really realise why they're doing it. It's, I mean, laughter is a social thing, isn't it? It's like when you go to a comedy gig or whatever, you'll sit in the, you're sitting in an audience, you'll find the comedian far funnier than you would watching them alone at home on TV. So I think, yeah, it's a big point of difference between UK and US comedies, because US comedies tend to use laughter tracks a lot. And I'm a big fan of Friends, by the way, but I think I once, to be stupid, I laughed deliberately whenever the canned laughter came in once, and it really kind of put me off the episode, because you're right, it just becomes artificial. And I think UK comedies have kind of managed to largely sidestep that. There are definitely examples of UK comedies using laughter tracks, but I think the ones that I love tend to have avoided that pitfall and kind of just let the writing do the talking.
And I've just, whilst we've been talking, I've just Googled the Peep Show laugh track and I found it, and it turns out it was actually a special feature made by the guys who made, like, the producers of Peep Show.
Oh, wow.
So it was a special feature. So I'll share that on our social media channels. I'll probably have shared it by the time you're listening to this episode, because I think it's quite an interesting thing to watch. But yeah, it just changes. It just changes it entirely. Yeah, it's entitled "If Peep Show Was Filmed Before a Live Studio Audience." So yeah, check that out on our social media channels. I'll stick it at the top of the page.
Support for podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. And Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across Europe. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. So why do you need Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0? Well, we've all got our own nightmare grooming stories about shaving our nether regions. Whether it's nicks, cuts and grazes, or an unfortunate tale involving hair removal cream, it can seem like you're always a moment away from disaster. Not with the Lawnmower 4.0. After using it myself, it really does make a massive difference. It's quick, easy to use, and most importantly, I felt safe while using it. With the Lawnmower 4.0, Manscaped have engineered the ultimate groin trimmer, with their advanced skin-safe technology making you confident to shave your boys. So, if you're like Mark and are worried about your testicles looking abnormal, the Lawnmower 4.0 can give you the confidence to do something about it and make your balls feel like $1 million. So go on, start shaving your testicles like it's the most natural thing in the world, and get 20% off and free shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PEEP. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
But yeah, so the rough plot of this episode is very, very similar to what you've seen in the UK one. Mark's chasing after Sophie. He does a little bit of sort of weird flirting, and instead of talking about having a bath or shower, he comments on the fact that she's wearing a top that she last wore at, like, the staff briefing on the previous Friday. So he's still doing that sort of creepy behaviour towards her, which is honouring the script, I suppose, which is accurate to the sort of character. And she responds in a similar way to the way that Olivia Colman's Sophie does. And they then still, they mirror this weird sort of cartoon flirting that Mark and Sophie have. And what I found quite interesting was the fact that they use the same, literally, the same cartoon drawing that David Mitchell's Mark does, to the point of, like, the hands are the same. Like, it's identical to the one that they do in the UK episode. There's just more of a backstory to why he chooses to do it like that, which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, I found that interesting as well. And I thought the one thing they did do well is Mark, the whole bit around Mark getting, like, kind of making a dash from his workplace to meet with Jez to be like, look, I need to come up with an idea, and the person he would go to is obviously going to be Jez. And so they have this little meeting that then kind of sees this cartoon evolve. I actually quite liked the idea of that a lot, and I kind of imagined how that would play out with, you know, David Mitchell and Robert Webb, and I think that could have been a really funny scene. But unfortunately, I'm so put off by Jeremy's character after that opening scene that I'm already kind of against him. And it really kind of, it's hard, it's a slippery slope. I kind of found it really difficult to kind of come back after that. But I did like the idea behind this scene. And it's like I said before, I kind of appreciated that they were going to some effort to kind of mix things up a little bit, and they were taking a few, you know, actually kind of doing some writing themselves rather than doing a one-for-one remake.
Yeah, whereas basically everything else that then happens forthwith is basically nicked directly from then what happened. So we then, after he's gone and done his sort of awkward cartoon, we see Jez over at Marsha's flat, where she then does the pyramid scheme bit that's been done by Tony, obviously, in the UK edition. And that conversation is almost verbatim what happens in the UK edition. We then get the next scene where Mark is calling Sophie, and I liked the fact they changed the song. I did quite like the fact that they didn't do it to Something Stupid by Robin Williams and Nicole Kidman. They do it to Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which is quite a nice little touch. I don't know why that song... Is that song playing in the background at some point? Yeah, it must be. Oh yeah, Jez is watching on the TV, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. They also, speaking of music, they have these like musical interludes, don't they, throughout the episode, like for the commercial breaks or whatever. They have like big, popular, famous songs, and I found that really weird and alien to a show like Peep Show, which, even though it kind of achieved like real mainstream success, it always kind of feels like a cult show. And so to kind of have these kind of like big songs just felt really odd to me. But I do like you say, I appreciate that they did mix it up a little bit. And I actually thought that this scene was actually one of the better moments for this pilot. I mean, obviously not as good as the original, but I think Johnny Galecki, out of the two of them, is kind of doing a better job to kind of carry this, which is interesting to me because, like I say, I really do dislike Leonard, kind of Johnny Galecki's main character, and the fact that I kind of drew certain parallels between his portrayal of Mark and then, you know, what he then went on to do with Leonard. It was interesting. I did find this like kind of amusing, and I thought that Johnny Galecki was kind of doing a better job, but then I had to kind of stop myself and go, but is that just because I found Jeremy so off-putting that kind of anything in comparison was better? But I like to think that actually I thought this was one of the better moments of the pilot.
Yeah, and I think, like we said, I think it is because it's believable, because Johnny Galecki does sort of play Mark in a more believable way than, or less, maybe less annoying way than Jeremy's played. And you can sort of, because of the nature of Johnny Galecki's acting, you can sort of believe that this is an awkward conversation, an awkward phone call that would happen. I think we can buy into it. And it's not, it doesn't feel like everything else in this episode, which is take the initial episodes of Peep Show and dial it up to 100, which is what basically happens in every other scene here. So I guess for that reason, it's probably the least bad episode, or the least bad part of the episode. But we sort of skip through, we keep going with other scenes that we've seen before. Jeremy and Mark, or Mark bumps into Jeremy doing the shopping. We then get the like you said at the beginning, the stationery cupboard scene. We get the confronting about the phone call that's made. And then we get the sort of weird conversations with Marsha, which obviously then Mark has with Tony. These ones aren't exactly the same as the episodes of Peep Show, though, are they? The UK Peep Show, I mean.
No, they're not. Yeah, this whole... The relationship that Marsha is sort of in but not in, I mean, it seems to be like a one-date thing that kind of crashes and burns before it even kind of really takes any form. I mean, like, yeah, it was a bit different. I don't really think it kind of added anything, though. I mean, I guess they kind of captured Tony in the fact that she's kind of quite, you know, all over the place. You don't really know kind of what's going on with Tony's character from one moment to the next, and they kind of gave this Marsha that some of that sort of like unstable kind of characteristics. But I don't really think Marsha adds all that much. Certainly nothing kind of new that we hadn't done with Tony before, which I guess is fine. Like, Tony is kind of like a side character. So you really want to be selling Mark and Jez. I think Tony or slash Marsha is just kind of fine.
Like, yeah, like you said, I think, again, because we only have this one episode, whereas the character of Tony is at least, we don't see her to her full extent within Warring Factions. We have to warm up to her through the interview and then on the pool before we see her really sort of get a bit unhinged.
Yeah, well, and we've got Warring Factions is actually quite Tony-centric, whereas the fact in this pilot, we're kind of fusing Warring Factions and the interview together. You kind of, Marsha doesn't get the same time in the pilot as Tony did, and the plot doesn't revolve around Tony, around Marsha, sorry, as it did with Tony in that first episode.
No, but also, yeah, I suppose that, yeah, that is the point. But like, I suppose we have the Tony-centric episode of Warring Factions, but she seems quite normal, or relatively normal in that episode. It's only really by the time we get to On the Pull, which is episode 3, that she starts to get a bit... We see that other side to her. But again, we haven't got the character development time that you have in proper Peep Show.
No, and that's always going to be part of... Like I say, the US pilot of The Office, I thought, is awful. So you never know, do you? Like, the US Office went on to be, you know, one of the biggest comedies of all time. Like, whether, you know, you've... faithful to the UK or whatever, like that version, but you can't deny that the US Office has done massive things and it's got a huge audience, and yet that pilot is awful, but they managed to kind of, they pursued it anyway, gave it to a dedicated team of writers who know US comedy, and they went on and achieved great things. So you never know, this Peep Show thing, if they you know, greenlit a first series, it may well have been massive. It's hard to say. I mean, you might think, oh, there's no way, but I think that when I revisit the first episode of The American Office, so you can never really be sure.
No, and I think, without wanting to labour the point, I think we've sort of put the nail in the coffin of this. It's not great. I don't think it's helped by the fact that it's very, the version we've got of it, the sound quality is terrible, the flickering, like whatever it's been recorded on and then uploaded onto YouTube is obviously not of great quality. Someone's really sort of dug it out of the bottom of the bin to upload it for us, which I don't think then helps the appeal of it at all. It's missing, it does have the monologue, which I suppose is a saving grace, but it doesn't really use the point of view camera at all. Like, I can't really think. It's maybe got a couple of instances that you could argue a point of view. But one of the comments on the YouTube upload, someone says, I love how Americans are so simple. They couldn't even handle the idea of having the first person camera view. And like, the whole reason it's called Peep Show is because it's meant to be like, that's, and you've touched on it like all the time, like that is one of the like pillars of the show.
Yeah, I think that YouTube comment is a bit harsh. Like, it's not about being simple or not, but I do think it is a kind of unforgivable sin to take a show called Peep Show and that is, you know, famous for having that point of view work and almost abandon it entirely. There are definitely instances where they are using the point of view, but they're few and far between. And I think, yeah, I mean, I've spoken at length, we both have, about the fact that kind of like the two pillars that hold this show up, well, them, you know, Mark and Jez, but in terms of like the format of the show, it is the internal monologue and the point of view camera angle, because we get a lot of comedy that stems from those two things, and often when they kind of combine and it kind of opens new doors to comedy. And I think, yeah, they're very underused in this. And it's a shame, because I actually thought the very beginning of this episode, where Mark is watching TV, there's a point of view angle shot of, you know, him pointing the TV remote at the TV, and he's watching some sort of World War II documentary. And there's actually the opening line I thought was funny, where he's reflecting, he's looking at, you know, images of the Nazis, and he's saying, like, the Nazis were definitely wrong, but that is a handsome leather coat. Like, that kind of got a smirk out of me, and I could kind of, I could imagine David Mitchell sort of, like, delivering that line. I don't think it's entirely quite Mark, because I don't really think Mark would be bothered about kind of fashion choices and things, but I think there's just about enough of it, with a little bit of a twist, that actually kind of got a kick out of me. And I thought, oh, like, maybe I was misremembering and this isn't going to be quite so bad, because the first line kind of was, kind of hit with me.
Yeah.
And then they kind of just throw the whole thing in the bin, and we hardly, like I say, it's like criminally underused, the internal monologue and that point of view.
It just made me think of when Mark arrives to go on tour with Hans and Jez, and he's just like, I bought a new coat. Plus, it's got lapels, so I can wear it for work. That was just comparing the Nazi coat. That was all I could think of. But yeah, I think I'm not gonna. We could talk about the ins and outs of the episode, I think, all day. I think there's a lot of. I'm reading through some of the comments that people have left about it, and there's Reddit threads and all this sort of stuff of discussing what people have said, and some of them are just outright hilarious. Some of them are like, this was the bad thing. This has got to be a dream. Nothing this bad could ever happen in reality. This is like watching the British version, except I can't laugh at anything. It's terrible and I want to cry. And this one's slightly more pertinent, but, and I'd be interested in what you think of it. It reminds me of a child hearing a joke, failing to understand the joke, but then trying to retell it to everybody.
Wow. Yeah. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? Yeah.
It's they've tried to take Peep Show, and it's not even boiling it down to the essence. It's almost making a meal and forgetting, like making, like, I'm trying to think of an example, like making spaghetti bolognese and thinking, oh, do you know what? I'm not going to use spaghetti. I'm going to use rice. I'm not going to use mince. I'm going to use chicken. Like, you're taking away some of the real main cruxes and the nuances that make Peep Show what Peep Show is, and then expecting to have the same results. And I think both pilots of Peep Show that we've had access to. So we've had access to this one, which is obviously on YouTube, but then one of our sort of Peep Show acquaintances, Andrew, who runs a YouTube channel where he picks apart quite a lot of different TV shows, but specifically Peep Show, and go and check his YouTube channel out. I'll share a link to it when we drop this episode. He shared with us another Peep Show pilot episode that he has painstakingly put together. So basically he found various like 1 minute and 30 second clips of this pilot episode that was made in 2008, so after the Johnny Galecki episode, and has sort of pieced it together to what he thinks it would be. And I think it is basically, it's on the pull, is essentially what it's a remake of. It's quite hard to tell because there are chunks of it missing. But I don't know what you thought. I sent it to Tom earlier. I don't know what you thought as to how that compared to this Johnny Galecki one.
I mean, it was better, quite a bit better, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was, you know, that I particularly liked it. Like, I still think it's definitely rough. But as you said, this is something that was pieced together from different sources and kind of mashed together. So it's kind of, it's hard really to critique it in any kind of meaningful capacity, because we're not seeing it as it was, you know, actually filmed and produced. So I don't really want to get too deep into it, but I think while there's quite a lot of On the Pull in there, which is interesting, I thought, actually, because On the Pull is probably the best episode of series one, whereas Warring Factions is probably one of my least favourite episodes of all of, you know, the original Peep Show. So I think it was, you know, it's always going to be quite hard, like, in my opinion, if you're going to use that as your source material. I'm not surprised that they kind of, the Johnny Galecki one, pulled bits from The Interview, which is a much better episode. And this second remake is also using On the Pull, which is probably the peak for series one. So there's a lot of that. There's also, in the early clips of this sort of mashup, there's quite a bit more original material, I thought, which I like to see. They're embracing the point of view, camera angles a lot more. There's internal monologues, probably not that much more, probably similar levels, given that it's only a kind of like a 5-minute slice, but they're using it. And I think you can just tell that we don't really know how much involvement Sam and Jesse had in this, but I think they were at least kind of consulted with more, and kind of sold on the point of view and the internal monologue.
Yeah, from what I can gather, I think they were big parts of the writing on this. If you search the episode on IMDb and it comes up with writers, it comes up with Sam and Jesse.
Okay. I still don't know, because, like, Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant are, like, executive producers on every episode of The American Office, and they have, like, very, very little to do.
Yes, but this comes up as the writers. It doesn't come up with...
Yeah.
It says writers. It doesn't say...
But could that just be because they wrote On the Pull? I mean, I don't know. They could have both written extensively on this, but it's kind of hard to tell.
On the IMDb page, it says Spike TV, who is the people who made it, are peering into Peep Show, handing out a pilot order to the single-camera comedy adaptation of a UK series, Peep Show, from Pangea, the scripted arm of RDF USA, and British producers Objective, who are Sam and Jesse's company, is a modern-day odd couple centering on Jeremy, a slacker with misguided musical ambitions, and Mark, his uptight office drone roommate, who are living together and trying to survive the many unexpected hurdles life throws at them. So it obviously, Sam and Jesse had some kind of involvement, whether they were the principal writers or whether they were just involved in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, isn't it? And I think as well, without seeing that pilot in its entirety, like, we're able to watch, I mean, that's why we're focusing on this 2005 one, is because we can see it from start to finish and kind of critique it better. But I think what we see from this 2008 attempt is, I like to think, if I could see the whole thing, it would be better. But there's still things that just aren't quite clicking for me.
Yeah, I mean, they're both terrible, let's face it. Like, I don't... The Johnny Galecki one is bad. I think, like you said, I think the second one, I think what I found really hard about the 2008 episode was that the character of Mark is just so flat. He's so flat. There is, like, he does not resemble the character that David Mitchell has played at all. Like, very little, apart from the maybe slightly, like, awkward and self-doubting personality that you could say for a lot of people. I just don't feel like he is Mark.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of comes back to that point you made at the beginning, is that Mark was written for David Mitchell, and I think it's really hard to kind of undo that and kind of come as a new actor and step into those shoes, because, yeah, I don't know. I just think the casting for the UK version, you know, David and Rob, when a character's designed for you, it becomes kind of effortless, doesn't it? And I think that's the downfall, which is a shame, because I think there are small glimpses of kind of like what perhaps could have been, and who knows, if it had been picked up, if they'd broken through that, you know, got over that first hurdle and commissioned a full series, you never know. But I don't blame them for not picking it up. But as I said, I would have said that about the US Office. I would have said that about the US Inbetweeners, or, you know, other British comedies that have been remade.
But it does surprise me how something like the Inbetweeners did get picked up and turned into more than just that pilot. And that is awful. Like, because they basically rip off every episode. Like, every episode is just carbon copy of what's happened in the UK in between us. It really surprised me that Fox didn't at least give this a run.
Yeah. It would have been a gamble, but hey, yeah, sometimes they pay off. I don't know, it's hard. I mean, The Office, we have to remember, The Office won, like, Emmys and Golden Globes, and so perhaps they just thought, you know, this is an award-winning show, like, can we make it work? Whereas Peep Show in 2005, I'm guessing probably this
was hadn't really won anything, had it?
Earlier than that. Yeah, this was, you know, as far as I'm aware, like, the awards for Peep Show came later, sort of series 4 or 5 onwards. So perhaps they just thought, you know what, we tried, didn't quite work out, let's just knock it on the head. Whereas with The Office, they thought, no, you know what, there's an award-winning show here. If we can just perhaps rework certain bits, we could really make a good go of it. And thankfully they did.
Yeah. It would be interesting now, and obviously we haven't really talked about the fact there is another US pilot of Peep Show, or another US version of Peep Show in development. It got sort of curtailed by COVID, but there was an all-female reboot sort of mooted in 2019 that hasn't really developed anywhere because of the pandemic, as far as we're aware. But it would be interesting to know whether they tried to do this pilot in, like, say, 2010. Obviously, they wouldn't have got Johnny Galecki, but, like, 2010, whether it would have been more successful because more Americans would have heard of Peep Show. I don't know whether that would have had any bearing on it.
Could well have done, yeah. I mean, we were sort of,
it's all hypothetical, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. There were a few other things I wanted to touch on, though, about this episode that we hadn't discussed. The first one was the opening credits.
Yes.
Like the title card was just so... I had to rewind it and watch it again because I kind of couldn't believe what I'd seen. It was shot both like a kind of old school detective show and also like one of those cringy 90s music videos. And
yeah, old school detective show was exactly what I thought.
Yeah, really, really weird the way you've got Mark and Jez walking down the street, kind of looking over to the camera, like trying to be kind of like smouldering looks. And then you have the Peep Show, sort of the name pop up with these really awkward, the eyes appearing in the peas, and then one of them's winking. It was just, I couldn't believe what I was watching. It was totally alien. And I just thought, wasn't in keeping with the tone of the show, like in any way.
No, it completely wasn't. I think, again, it's one of those things where we're so used to the UK opening credits and whatever else. But this was... It was just very, very American.
I don't even know if it's just that. I just... Like I say, like, earlier I said about, you know, if you can take creative risks. And I'm all for that. And I kind of, like, commend them for trying. But I'm not sure which person came up with that idea and thought that was a good one, because it just, like I say, it's just not in keeping with what Peep Show is. And like the musical interludes, even like with the scene transitions, there's at one moment we get this kind of like jolly little bouncy soundtrack, and I just thought, this isn't Peep Show. Peep Show is kind of grounded, and it's partially depressing, and it's the struggles of these two characters and the bickering. It's not all like do 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 do, like, now we're back with Peep Show. Like, it's just, no, that's not how it is. That's just wrong.
Yeah, big time.
And I thought there were some interesting differences in terms of, like, the use of the internal monologue. There's one moment that plays out exactly in the UK original, Mark moaning at Jez, like, you know, the classic kind of get a job, like, you don't pay any rent or whatever. And there's a line where he says, you know, you need to get a job, but no pressure, some pressure. And in the original, David Mitchell adds that some pressure in his internal monologue, and it's kind of like a funny little aside. Whereas in this, he says the entire thing out loud, and I just thought it was an interesting choice because this version, Mark seems to be kind of more willing to express his feelings. And I know that's kind of just like a sly dig, but there's that. There's also the way that Mark asks Sophie out is very different. He just kind of comes out and just says, can I have your number? Whereas in the original, he kind of makes up this weird, like, I kind of need it in case of a work emergency. And he kind of like, you know, beats around the bush before he gets it. Whereas this Mark is kind of like, you need to get a job, a bit more to the point. Can I have your number? He's a little bit, you know, he's willing to kind of express himself and share his thoughts more openly, which I did think was quite more American. Like, we associate like British people as kind of like, you know,
reserved,
good old English reserve, as Mark would say in our original. This Mark doesn't seem to quite be the same. He's certainly awkward and shy, and that all kind of plays out with Sophie, but there are also instances where he's really not like that.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's like it's Americanized. It's the Mark of not having the subtlety, and the way to get the girl is just to ask her outright. I'd be really interested to know what our American listeners think. I'd be really interested, when I release this episode, please, I want sort of feedback from everybody, but specifically our American listeners, and there are lots of you. Just talk to us about like what you make of this episode and how it fits within the sort of continuum of American comedy, whether it's still too British or whether where it, because it doesn't hit the spot for us. And I'd be interested to know whether it hits the spot for you guys in any different way to the way that it hits it doesn't for us.
Yeah, I'd be very interested. I think it's kind of universally hated, but I would be particularly keen to hear from our international audience, particularly, you know, Americans and, you know, probably Canadians as well, that sort of North American audience. To see kind of what the things that they've tried to kind of Americanize it, where that works and where that doesn't. But I think on the whole, I think the balance of trying to keep it, you know, similar whilst diverging, you know, trying to try new things, I just think doesn't work. Like the moment near the end when Mark just kind of out of nowhere like threatens Jeremy with violence, I was just like, whoa, like that suddenly kind of happened. That came out of nowhere. Like, sure, they'd had like a bit of conflict and competition like for Marsha, but then suddenly, you know, Mark is ready to throw hands and we get this awkward kind of little fight, not like, you know, they're squaring up to each other. And I thought, well, it took us like 7, 8, 9 series to kind of get to like even hints of, you know, physical like aggression between these two characters, and straight from the off here in the pilot they're like ready to throw down. I thought that was very, very odd.
Yeah, I didn't touch on that at the time, but yeah, the ridiculous fighting scene at the end where Marsha then walks in, I'm just like, by that point I'd given up. I think I just sort of like it wasn't any more daft than anything else that had happened.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's I think the YouTube comments, you mentioned them earlier, that kind of summed it up best for me was whoever is responsible for this has no idea whatsoever of what went on at Stalingrad, and although I can in no way compare my struggle to that of the Red Army, it was very hard to watch. I think that kind of hits the nail on the head. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the US pilot then. I think, like I said at the start, we're trying not to bash it too much, but I think there was kind of no avoiding it to a certain extent. But I hope that, you know, people still found it interesting. As I said, I think there were a few, you know, glimmers of hope, but I think on the whole, I do just think it's kind of an unforgivable sin for a show called Peep Show to kind of ditch the two pillars that the show and the comedy are built on.
Yeah, like, we could have made this episode a lot shorter. We could have just said that right at the beginning. We could have literally just said, yeah, the monologue and the point of view were not used correctly. And fundamentally, it's not particularly funny. And we could have saved ourselves an hour. But like,
but then the listeners yeah. wouldn't get to enjoy an hour of our company.
No, absolutely. I think, listen, if you've watched it having not listened to this episode and you're watching and you're listening to this episode now, then obviously you're going to see it in a slightly different way and you're going to know what we've talked about. If you're listening to this and then you're thinking, right, shit, I need to go and watch that episode, then hopefully, like, I don't feel like we can put you off any more than the first 30 seconds, Will.
No, I think it's one of those things, actually, when you know, set someone's expectations and say something, oh, something is awful, and then you go and you go, ah, it wasn't that bad. Like, you might find that, like, who knows? I knew it was going to be bad because I'd seen some of it already. And as I say, the very opening line kind of threw me a little bit off guard because I actually found it quite funny, but then it quickly deteriorates.
I tell you what, if you watch this and you like it, get in touch with us and I will block you on social media. No, I will. I'll listen to your reasons and disagree wholeheartedly.
I would be interested to hear like a genuine case as to like why someone found it funny. I would be perfectly willing to have that discussion because I think, yeah, perhaps there is, like I say, tiny, tiny glimmers of like little bits where I'm like, I can see what they're trying to do, but it just doesn't work given that I just love the original so much. It's kind of like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I just think Peep Show is too kind of quintessentially British, and I thought that of The Office as well, in fairness, and they managed to pull it off, but I don't know. Hard to put your finger on it.
Well, should we end with something happier? Should we share some good things that we're going to be doing in the next few weeks? Maybe lighten the mood slightly after this very despondent episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so this is the first of our sort of post series 9 set of specials. We have more coming to sort of see us to the end of the year. Rob, do you want to touch on, especially as you kind of helped, you know, did a lot of the heavy lifting to get what will probably be our next one set up, depending on, yes, you know, how we get timings, yeah, and calendars to align.
So I've been chatting to Liam Noble, who plays Big Mad Andy, and Doug Simpson, who is the quiz writer for Dobby Club.
And a wonderful patron of ours.
He is indeed, yeah, shout out to Doug. We have organised a quiz written by Doug himself, where instead of Tom and I going against each other, we are going to be working as a team to fire up against Liam. So we're going to go against Big Man Andy, we're going to play against one of the cast members from Peep Show, and of course Liam also works for Dobby Club and is their quiz host. Doug writes the questions and Liam reads them out. So Liam's Peep Show knowledge, if you're listening, Liam, I think your Peep Show knowledge is better than you're letting on. I feel like you're lulling us into a false sense of security slightly.
It should be flawless.
So we're going to do a sort of like ultimate Peep Show quiz, sort of series 1 to 9 type deal with them. So hopefully, yeah, I've got a couple of dates in the diary that I need to sort of organise with Tom, but those will be our next episode. And then we've got a couple of sort of other little ones that we're sort of discussing. We've had a real wave of people, and when I say wave, I mean like 3, who have talked to us about doing a sort of series 1, episode 1 rewind. So going right back to the beginning, don't worry, we're not going to go all the way through again, but sort of looking at Warring Factions again with the hindsight of having watched all 9 series and reviewed it all. And then for the life of me, I can't remember what the last episode we were talking about. Oh, we were going to do a rankings episode. We're going to do our top 10 of all time.
Yes.
Episode. So we've got a few more, and I think we're suddenly getting very close. You're listening to this sort of November the 13th, 14th or something. So we're getting a lot closer to Christmas. So we might actually, our specials might be slightly extended over this period, and you might just hear us
might creep into
into the new year, or especially into like the Christmas period, depending on when the days fall and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's what we've got lined up for the next couple of weeks. By the time you're hearing this, yeah, we won't have recorded anything else. I don't know what I was about to say there.
Yeah, yeah. But so we've got things certainly to kind of see us through to the end of the year, and perhaps a little bit beyond even. So yes, there's still content coming. We're still enjoying doing this, and we kind of want to make it last a little bit longer. So we've got reasons to do so. So we hope you stick with us, enjoy these specials while they last. Because yeah, we're coming not too far away from the end of the end. But has been good fun to be recording again. Looking forward to our next special. We'll see you next time. So. Unless you've got any final thoughts to add, Rob, we can wrap it up.
Yeah, no, I think give us a shout out on social media, like check out our Facebook page, Podcast Equals the Pharaohs, Twitter at Podcast Pharaohs, Instagram at Podcast Equals the Pharaohs. If you want to send us an email, it's podcastequalstheferos@gmail.com. I think let's get out of here.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening this week, and join us for next week for our next special. And thank you for joining me, Rob.
The bad thing. That was the bad thing.